Good morning. I'm Jeff Daly. This is the Morning Edition on the Cromwell Ag Radio Network. And we're joined this morning by Alan Brugler of Brugler Marketing. Alan, boy, last week, the financial market just had a roller coaster, sort of made the commodity market look kind of boring. Is there any correlation between what's going on the financial and the equity sector and what's going on with our base commodity prices?
There is definitely a relationship. It's actually a slightly negative correlation over time. In other words, you would expect if the equity markets sell off hard enough, money would go into other asset classes, which would include commodities. Sometimes that just means that commodities go down less than the stock market is going down. For reference, see 2008, 2009, both of them went down, but the commodities were actually a better place to be at that time. We are seeing a little cross flow right now on after some of these down days where money's coming out of the stock market. You're seeing a little nibbling on the buy side of the ags.
So then thinking about the commodity market, we sold off pretty hard, 10,000 contracts of wheat and of soy sold on Thursday, some buyback on Friday. Corn dropped off 26,000 contracts by funds on Thursday and then some bounce back into Friday. What was the play of the market that brought us some recovery in front of a weekend?
Well, I think the fact that it is the weekend. We sold off for most of the week, actually. The big sell-off was Thursday, but we were deteriorating Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We hit chart resistance the previous Friday. And so if you were short all week, by Thursday night, you had a pretty good pile of money sitting there. And I think some of these fund players just didn't want to risk it over the weekend. You had some hedger, including us, rolling down long puts, taking some money off the table because we don't want to give it back on a bounce-back rally. And so you did get a little bit of news flow on the wheat side. Egypt came in and bought 400,000 tons for immediate delivery, 10-day delivery. So that says they want it quick before it gets scarce. They're probably afraid the Russians are running out of stuff to ship. And that put a bid under the wheat market and helped corn.
So then thinking out loud about this harvest, I am told by some analysts they feel like there's pretty strong pressure on the corn trade with the harvest until we get up to about 65% harvested. What's your view? How long does the pressure of the harvest stay on this market that might eventually take us to a harvest low?
Well, that is kind of a long-running rule of thumb, is you've got to get to 60, 70% harvested, and then most of it has got a home or knows where it's going, and your basis starts to firm first. There's a mechanical function there, too, in that as elevators buy some of the excess, the stuff guys can't store at home, they're hedging short on the board, and the funds are buying against it, and fund buying can be the trigger that moves that price up. Then it starts to feed on itself.
So then thinking about the supply, I'm going with the second side of this now. There's the harvest and potentially the harvest low, and then there's the second harvest when this stuff comes to market. Here's what I'm told, that there are some country elevators that are open for several days and they have shut down for a couple of days and move out product. I'm told that we've already got thousands and thousands of bushels on the ground in bags and in other ways. And I'm even told that there were some farmers in central Illinois that were shrink wrapping their farm machinery and putting grain on the ground in their tool sheds. It tells me that we've got a lot of supply. What I don't know is the effect this has on prices end of the year, beginning of next year. How long does this burdensome harvest really weigh on this market and limiting any kind of chance of a recovery?
Well, the question is, after you're taking all those steps to take it off the market, how much of a rally do you want to see before you let anything loose? I think producers in general are looking for $3.90 or $4 corn on the board, at least, not cash. And want to see a 9 in front of their bean prices before they're going to get too motivated to move anything. The bean one will be a little colored by USDA's announcement and whether we get the second half of the market adjustment payment or some shadow of that. But again, I think you have to have some kind of initial rally, either basis led or futures led, before any of that's going to come loose. Producers know that corn stocks usage ratio is a lot tighter globally We know that we should be seeing strong export shipments out of the U.S. for the next 4, 5, 6 months until first crop Brazilian harvest is pretty well underway. And that's, you know, you just have to wait for that sort of. That'll gin up the cash demand, if not the futures.
I'm told that the chief economist of the USDA's methodology for arriving at that original round of payments has been made public, and that formula may or may not change as they evaluate a second payment. I've heard the secretary suggest that maybe that payment doesn't need to come or maybe not be as big because there's an agreement that's been signed, or at least cussed and discussed, between Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. Others say it's not signed yet and it's not approved yet, so it's not real. And that same group also points out that while there might not be any new tariffs, the existing tariffs we have still have us at a $2 discount to the globe's price compared to what Brazilian farmers are going to see. Do you think this payment is warranted, and would they probably keep the same ratio, or do you think there might be a chance that USDA would drift out to some other commodities?
Well, I think the USDA got a lot of political heat on that thing, particularly corn producers complaining they only got a penny. And the soybean guys in North Dakota saying, well, you know, our basis is $1.65. We should have got more than the guys down in the on the Mississippi River Basin, that type of thing. So they're trying to wrestle with that, whether they should adjust the distribution or the amounts rather than just a flat here you go kind of thing. I think the arguments that you cited are pretty good regarding the USMCA. We're probably going to get the thing signed, but will we get it ratified in all three countries, and or will we cut a deal on steel so that Mexico takes off the tariffs on pork and, you know, some of those other issues that we've got that have not been resolved yet?
We're talking this morning with Alan Brugler of Brugler Marketing. We'll learn just a little about Alan, and then move on and take a little deeper look, perhaps at 2019 and beyond. I'm Jeff Nalick. You're listening to the Morning Edition on the Cromwell Ag Radio Network. Good morning and welcome back to the Morning Edition on the Cromwell Ag Radio Network. An opportunity this morning to talk to Alan Brugler of Brugler Marketing. Alan, tell us about your business, who you serve, and how folks could follow up with you if they would like to.
Well, we're a registered supplies trading advisor. We're advisory only at this point. We're looking at doing some active management, but right now you would call us at 402-697-3623 and say, hey, I need some help with my marketing. This thing's confusing as heck out here, and I need somebody with top-level access to all the players and a good, consistent advisory track record. You can visit us on our website at www.brugler-marketing.com. We also have, if you have an Apple iPad, we have an app called Ag Market you can download that shows a lot of our capabilities.
You know, back when global supplies were tight, it was pretty easy to have a good marketing plan. Just go sell it. But I'm going to ask this because you've sold a crop or two, bought a crop or two, and bought and resold a crop or two over a period of time. Alan, have we ever been here before? Have you ever seen anything that looked like this before?
Well, the commodity markets are new every day. I mean, the saying that I heard once was, once Wall Street knows how to do the dance, they change the tune. All right, it's never quite the same the second time around. We certainly haven't been dealing with this type of tariff structure battle since, at least the 1930s or in 40s. We've had high tariffs before, and Smigali and all that. But the thing you have to remember is this is not just a tariff situation. It's also a surplus production situation where we've got record yields in corn and beans. We were going to tank the price anyway. It's just less clear than maybe sometimes as to how fast we can pedal the stuff and get it out of here.
Life experiences tell me that sometimes in the heat of battle, you say things and do things you wish you didn't. But during this trade spat between China and the U.S., it has given a voice to some of the people inside China that weren't very comfortable that a lot of their meal supplies, their protein needs, were being satisfied by one particular country. And it's that group now that is voicing that not only do we not want to buy from you now, we want to change the paradigm, so maybe we don't have to buy from you again. The more general question I have for you here is, are we doing a long-term damage to our reputation that may go beyond just this current spat?
Well, I think everybody's going to re-examine those relationships. I've said for several years now, you know, China's whole 63% of all the beans in the world get off in China. I said in any other business, this would be regarded as stupid because you've got all your eggs in one basket and you're dependent on one customer. So the U.S. may have been over-reliant on China to begin with from that perspective. Flipping it, as you just did, the Chinese are more diversified in terms of the percentage of their needs that are coming from U.S. versus Argentina or Brazil. But it's rational for them to say, I want to spread out my sources a little bit more. And, yeah, so we probably have lost some market share, or will lose the market share out of this thing.
So out of the first 7 weeks of the marketing year, which is not a lot of time, but it's still a portion of the marketing year, we'd sold about 7 million bushels or a million a week, and I'm surprised that we did to China. Last year, that was about 290 million bushels. But we're also being noted that we're going to sell and have already sold to people that we traditionally wouldn't. So if our beans are going to wind up at some other port, does this change the time where demand would come to the market and might change the time that we might expect to see some pop in the market with an up rally?
Yeah, I think it does. We did an analysis on this way back in March and basically said that the fill-in effect, or the balloon effect we call it, you push in one place, it pops out a different place. You basically are going to lose about 4 million tons to 5 million tons on your balance sheet for the year. In other words, that's the part of the Chinese business that we don't think will ship somewhere else. It's mostly reflecting stocks drawdown in South America. But the other point of that is you have to take a lower price, and there's a delay of 4 to 6 weeks in the cycle of deliveries as you're finding those other markets, finding those other homes. So, yeah, it probably does backload our exports instead of seeing a huge surge in October, November that we usually do on export inspections. You know, maybe that's a little flatter and extends out a little further because it's going to other countries that don't have the same timing needs.
I'm told there are three kinds of lies. There's lies, there's damn lies, and then there's forecasts for the supply of grain inside China. With that, the American Farm Bureau looked at USDA numbers and said that according to USDA, Chinese have about 825 million bushels of soybeans in surplus, and they're gambling that they can make that last, along with some other protein purchased from other sources, that would make it so that they'd have enough to get by till the new Brazilian crop comes in. Do you buy into that?
Well, they're definitely doing everything they can. The most recent iteration came through Reuters, and that was that they had an export tax on soybean, or export tax rebate on soybean meal. In other words, if a Chinese crusher wanted to ship some of the meal back out of the country, they were actually rebating the export taxes on that. Obviously, if you're tight on soybean meal, you don't do that. You don't want it leaving. So they took that tax off. They're doing a lot of those types of things. But you also have to remember that they're going to tell you every single thing that they can tell you about how they don't need you anymore in this environment. They've been very public in saying they want hog producers to use a corn and lysine, ration and cut back on the soybean meal so they don't need as many beans. And there's things of that nature, but we also know that producers that have a ration that's working for them are going to be reluctant to change it.
So let's look now at a little bit of 2019, and some very concerning numbers came from the Kansas City Fed this past week that farm operating loans or non-real estate loans were up about 30% over the previous few months. This is not buying machinery. This is not buying land. This is borrowing money to keep the lights on. We're in a situation now where this year's operating loans got to be paid for, and we're at the banker with our hat in our hand trying to look at finding funds to plant a new crop for 19. I've got a feeling that's going to be a very difficult conversation for some people. Do we see it in the market?
Yeah, but the ground's going to get planted. Somebody's going to plant it. You're right. There's more producers that are having to borrow, and I had a similar conversation with Rabobank and with the St. Louis Fed people the other day. There's definitely more operating loans. They're bigger. They're much bigger operating loans than they've had the last couple of years. But we do have to remember also that back in 2012, 2013, 2014, a lot of producers paid off their loans. The traditional borrowers either quit borrowing or greatly reduced their borrowings. Now they're going back to that longer-term structure where working capital's down and they need more money to borrow. And we've got some people that are being stressed pretty badly here, and some of them may not get the money borrowed that they want to borrow. But my suspicion is that ground will still get farmed one way or the other.
All right. So based on what you had said before, that farmers want something with a 4 and something with a 9, if I'm looking at the Friday market at the board, I've got to go out to Sep Dece for corn to get something that's close to a 4 or just above it. And for soy, I've got to go August, Sep, Nov, basically new crop, before I get to something that's close to a 9 or above a 9. What happens in this marketplace between now and beginning of January, end of February? Anything you see that can pop that for some of these old crop months that might narrow that spread or change it?
Well, yeah, again, we know markets move. The average trading range in beans is about $1.70 a bushel per marketing year. In years with greater than 10% stocks usage ratio, for corn it's about $1.13. So, and those are averages. So, the smallest range we've ever had in corn in a marketing year is 44 cents. Things will either occur or will be interpreted as having occurred in such a way as to move the market. Funds don't make any money if it's going sideways unless they're just short strangling options. They need market movement. I think that fundamentally the stories that are most likely to drive you are either exports miraculously get a lot better, and that's been an ongoing theme in beans for years, or you get South American weather problems of some kind. Too wet, too dry, early freeze, you know, any of those things will work to trigger a little rally.
Alan Brugler is with us this morning of Brugler Marketing. Alan, thanks for taking time.
It's been my pleasure.
I'm Jeff Nally. This is the Morning Edition on the Cromwell Ag Radio Network.